Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's time for Below Grade Level. Let's kick this into high gear.
Hello and welcome to Below Grade Level, the show where we take the books that we read as kids and read them as adults and ruin them. I'm one of your hosts, Jonathan Eaton, and with me as always is Becca Eaton.
Hi.
And Chris Oleski.
Hello.
And that's it. Just the three of us today. How are you guys doing?
Pretty doing darn good.
Smacking mm-hmm. a pen against yep. the boom arm.
I think I have ADD. I'm certain of it at this point.
Clack.
Clack.
Clack. If you hear clack, it's just Becca's pen.
Yeah. Sorry. I'll try to contain myself.
It's fine. I don't care. No guests today, but we're gonna press ahead. And we've got some cool guests, I think, coming up. And I don't know what we're going to read after this book, but I think it should be something kind of spooky because we're getting into that season.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Maybe another pike.
Honestly.
I kind of want to be a pike-only podcast.
It's leaning
it's
heavily.
It's all I want to read.
It's leaning heavily. I was like, maybe
there's
Goosebumps.
So many.
And I'm like, no.
There's so many Christopher Pike books
yeah.
that I already know of that I want to read.
Yeah. Yeah. But before we get to probably another Christopher Pike, we get to finish reading The Eyes of Kid Midas, which started off crazy and has continued to be.
Oh my God, we have a lot of this book left.
Really, really crazy. I think we can get through a decent amount of it.
We're almost to the halfway point.
Yeah. Becca, catch me and Chris and the listener up on what happened last time. And if you're just mm-hmm. joining us for this episode
Why?
In the middle of a book, I highly recommend you go back and listen to the last two episodes where we started reading this book because it is fucking bonkers.
It is a thrill ride. I was going to say a roller coaster.
Yeah.
But there are no lulls. It's all crazy.
It's all crazy. And it's really, it's getting disturbing.
Yes. I just reading this to myself, we're at such a crazy point currently, and mm-hmm. we're only a third of the way through the book.
Yeah. We've only
done
act
one. I don't even
know
what's going to happen because it feels like the main character is going to die. So
yeah,
this shit's crazy. So last time on The Eyes of Kid Midas, Kevin, our main character, showed his power to his friend Josh by taking him out into the woods and wishing for an ice cream cone.
As you do.
And then they wished for all of the food in the world and mm-hmm. ate way too much food and ate way too much ice cream. And it was a pretty gross scene, if I remember correctly.
Like I feel like if this was a Friday kid's night. Movie... I feel like if this was a kid's movie, they would have like done that scene where like the kids would have had prosthetic bellies on.
Yeah.
Like really gross, like distended stomachs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just food and ice cream dripping down their faces.
God. Like me on a Friday night.
Jesus Christ.
And then Kevin makes it storm for some fucking reason and like ruins the camping trip and almost kills everybody by just going mad with power immediately.
That's what I was just gonna say. It's just mad with power.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I have the power to do anything.
Like, what can I do? I'll eat a lot of junk food and then I'll kill everyone I know.
I might as well just become a supervillain.
It's like this kid never heard the saying, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
I know.
He definitely has never heard that saying.
Idiot.
So Kevin and Josh, okay, so we're back in the real world now. Kevin and Josh skip school and do a bunch of shenanigans involving wishing for an insane amount of stuff in Kevin's house.
Yeah. And we should mention that it's magic glasses.
Oh.
For anyone who doesn't know.
If you've just joined us for this episode, then the wishes are happening because of glasses.
Like, via magic
and
glasses.
I strongly suggest you start at the first episode.
Which
he found glasses on a mountain. And
right.
That's really all the context I can give you.
Magic Native American 90 sunglasses that heat up dangerously when you wish with them.
Yes. So they wish for an insane amount of just things like cars and arcade machines and like video games and like clothes and stuff. I don't know. Like they fill his house with shit that he's wishing for. Kevin is getting sicker progressively fast. He's getting so sick.
His head.
He's got a horrible headache. His eyes hurt. He's like horribly sick and weak.
Yeah.
The glasses are giving him a brain tumor.
Yeah. They're like sapping his life force away. And so then they realize like, oh no, I'll get in trouble if our house is filled with shit.
Yeah.
So then he wishes it all over to his neighbor's house, which is like this really old couple.
Yes.
So there's like pianos growing out of their front lawn and shit, and they fuck up their house.
And there were two Lamborghinis?
Yeah, two Lamborghinis.
Two Lamborghinis that he wished into his neighbor's house.
Yeah. So they fuck up their neighbor's house so he doesn't get in trouble.
And how old was he again? Like 12?
I think he's 12.
He's 12 or 13.
Yeah.
Like, he's too old for some of this bullshit.
I do remember last time we were reading thinking, like, you seem too old to be acting the way you're acting.
He's a late bloomer. Yeah.
Like, there was a Playboy that they didn't look at.
Yeah. That's he was, ridiculous. Like, actively, like, not only is he not wishing for anything porny or, like, girls or anything like that, but he won't even look at a regular Playboy that's already at his house.
It's extremely unrealistic.
Yeah, it's like the opposite of weird science.
It really is. It's normal science. It's
like, and then so the last robot. Note I wrote. Yeah. So the last note I wrote for myself surprised me because I didn't remember. And this is just in learning about the people in his neighborhood. There's a dentist named Frankie Philpott who has a paranormal TV show. And I hope to God he comes back.
That is... like five hats on a hat. That's why also a dentist? Why is he a dentist?
I don't know.
That's crazy.
Why is it the fact that it's Frankie Philpott with like an F and then a PH makes me crazy.
Oh
my
God.
It makes me want it to be Frankie with a PH, which is also crazy, but I want it to match.
Yeah.
That'd be a tragedy name.
Yeah.
Frankie.
Philpott. And that's where we are.
There was something else I was thinking of, and then I forgot. I was going to mention. I don't remember. Oh, that's what it was. It was that Kevin and Josh wishing all the shit into their house. And it's all, like, stereo equipment and couches, I think.
Yeah,
like, armchairs.
Like furniture.
It reminded me of that episode of Parks and Rec when they go camping, and Tom...
yeah.
Just like buys everything from Sky Mall.
Yeah.
And he just has like a Sky Mall like camping tent with like a Roomba and shit.
DJ
I was just
Roomba.
Like, that's DJ Roomba. I was just thinking that's what it, I was picturing that,
yeah,
basically.
Just the Sky Mall catalog in this child's house.
Exactly. Well, okay. Let's continue on this journey of the Eyes of Kid Midas. We're at chapter 7, which is called Kevin Becoming.
Kevin Becoming.
Kevin Becoming. Oh boy. While certain other parts of the world may have been engulfed in storm clouds, the suburban town of Ridgeline awoke to a bright sunny day. Is that just alluding to the fact that he fucked that mountain up for the rest of eternity?
It'll never not be storming.
Yeah.
Like, if it was a show in the background on the TV, it'd be like, catastrophic storms across the nation. And
yeah. Huge flooding at that mountain. The sun rose behind the electrical tower on the hill in the back of Kevin Midas's house, casting shadows of the girders on Kevin's white walls. The room had stayed cold all night. Oh, right. Like, that was the other thing, is that it was freezing in their house because the magic glasses were using... they had to, like, get energy from somewhere, so it was like sucking the like heat out of his house, and like everything was frozen. Okay. The room had stayed cold all night, defying the thermostat's attempt to keep it the same temperature as the rest of the house. Only now only now, as the morning light began to shine through the eastern window, did warmth return to Kevin's life. Aww. All night he had stayed bundled under the many blankets that his mother always insisted he kept folded up on the end of his bed. How many blankets?
Why did they have to stay there? And why didn't he just go sleep on the couch in the living room?
I don't know. Is there like 20 blankets on his bed? When he awoke at dawn, that would be too suspicious. Him sleeping on the couch.
His parents didn't go in his room or near it.
Yeah. When he would walk past the room and be like, why is the door cold, son? Yeah.
Why is there frost?
You try to open it up, you're like, ow, Jesus. When he woke at dawn, he couldn't move a muscle without feeling incredible pangs shoot through his head and then ricochet down through the rest of his body. Me too, Kevin, but I'm also almost 40. He had gone straight to bed the night before without eating, so he felt weak, and he could do little more than lie there and watch the slow progress of the girder shadows as they moved across the wall. There was a buzzing around him, a hum that could barely be heard. At first, he took it for his father's electric razor, and then for the buzz of the high-tension wires outside, until he realized that the sound was coming from his desk.
Ah.
Are the glasses vibrating?
The glasses were there, resting 6 inches from the wall, 6 inches from an electrical outlet. Kevin watched in amazement as a line of blue electricity arced across the air from the outlet to the glasses. They're recharging, Kevin realized. Wow, this book invented wireless charging.
Wow!
Kevin, why the hell is our power bill so high?
They had taken the heat from his room, but it wasn't enough. Now they were sucking the very electricity from the walls! How much energy did they need, Kevin wondered.
Couldn't the glasses have started with electricity and not heat?
You would think so.
Yeah.
How much could they absorb? Kevin reached out and took a pencil from his desk. With it, he gently moved the glasses away from the wall until the electrical arc was broken. The glasses just sat there now, glistening in the morning sun. Mm. Kevin then crawled out from underneath his covers like a slug from underneath a rock. I love this book. I just
so
want to
good.
Say
it's
it again.
So well written.
While everyone... excuse me. While everyone else in the house still slept, sorry, I'm still getting over a cold. He suffered through a shower that didn't make him feel. Wait, hold on.
I love the idea of suffering through a shower.
While everyone else in the house still slept, he suffered through a shower that didn't make him feel the least bit better. You need food.
Yeah.
And, like, to raise your body temperature, I'd think the shower would help with
eat
that.
Eat a burger,
whatever,
and he has undiagnosed ADHD.
Yeah, just like me. When he returned to his room, the glasses were waiting. He put them on even before he dressed and instantly felt the change. It began with his eyes, a soothing feeling that slowly spread down and out, reaching the tips of his fingers and the soles of his feet. He closed his eyes and let the feeling wash through him. He was better now, and he couldn't imagine why he had waited this long to put the glasses back on. He dressed in plain old jeans and a shirt, then stared at himself in the tall mirror against his closet door. Plain, ordinary, boring. That's how he looked. That's how he always looked.
Oh, man.
There's no reason to dress like this, Kevin thought. No reason at all. He could look like... He could be whoever or whatever he wanted.
Oh, my God.
So we haven't learned any lessons yet.
No, none.
Of course not. The secret, Kevin figured, was not to ask for everything you ever wanted all at once, but just to ask for the right things at the right time. Maybe we are learning.
Okay, a little bit.
He imagined what he wanted himself to be wearing. He could almost see it in the mirror. And then he said the words that dressed him head to toe. I can't fucking wait.
Kevin stared at himself in the mirror from all angles, admiring his flashy designer outfit, complete with brand new basketball shoes, until he caught sight of Terry standing in the doorway behind him. What's with you? She asked, morning gravel still in her throat. Oh, sorry. What's with you? She asked, morning gravel still in her throat. Nothing, said Kevin, casually flipping up the collar on his new leather jacket. I'm checking out some new clothes. Is there anything wrong with that? You're
leather
such
jacket
a...
and basketball shoes?
Yeah, it's super cool.
Leather jacket and
probably
Chucks.
Probably how Michael Jordan dressed.
Chucks or basketball shoes?
I think they would say Chucks.
She replied, both of them knowing full well that the true basket case was Terry, as she shuffled off with drooping eyelids towards the bathroom.
What?
I love
what?
That sentence.
I don't remember her being a basket case. I just remembered that she's like a bully and younger than him. Like
yeah.
The very rare
well,
younger
like
sibling bully.
A thousand times cooler than him, it sounds like. And like yeah. Self-assured. And
also,
he's just like really
you
insecure.
Don't have a sister, Jonathan.
Oh, that's true.
I don't.
Sisters be crazy.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, that morning, Kevin joined his father on his morning jog, something Kevin had tried only once before. On that one occasion, Patrick Midas had driven Kevin to absolute exhaustion and then acted surprised when Kevin couldn't keep up. His father, who liked to speak in short, meaningless phrases, always told Kevin...
So he showered, put on a leather jacket, and then went for a run.
Doesn't everyone Great idea. Run in their leather?
Super good idea, yeah.
Always told Kevin, no pain, no gain, and used that motto as an excuse to turn any father and son physical activity into a trial by fire for Kevin.
Oh boy.
Super Kevin, healthy.
It's gonna fuck him up.
He won't be in therapy later.
Kevin was amazed that after all that, he still enjoyed sports as much as he did, although his best sport was soccer, the only sport his father absolutely detested.
What?
You don't even throw anything. Jesus. With the glasses firmly
they play it in Europe.
With the glasses firmly affixed to his face and a well-placed wish on his lips, Kevin joined his father on the morning run and left the poor man in his dust. When Patrick Midas finally made it back to the front door, dripping with sweat and barely able to breathe, Kevin, already there, jogged in place, barely winded at all, and said, "No pain, no gain," with a shrug. Nice. Before going inside, Kevin sat on the porch and watched the Kimballs for a while. Their house would never be the same, but perhaps that didn't matter, because the old couple was... excitedly preparing for what would be the mother of all garage sales.
Is it a school day?
I don't know. I don't know. I just love that he used his wish to humble his father.
Yes.
That's awesome. That's fucking hilarious. Who's got the big dick now, Dad? Things were different for Kevin in school. It began that very day and gradually took hold throughout the week. Perhaps it was the way he was dressed. Or perhaps it was the way no one could see his eyes behind those intensely cool glasses that seemed to change color at will. Or maybe it was just self-confidence. A presence about him made kids get out of his way when he walked down the hall, even though he was a head shorter than most. Or maybe it was the way that he always seemed to have just what people needed when they needed it. Kevin had never before had the guts to join in a conversation with kids who weren't his best buddies. But now, that had changed. Aw, he has anxiety. Justin Gear.
Okay.
G-E-R-E. I'm guessing Gear.
Like Richard Gear?
Yeah. Is that how it's spelled?
Like Richard
G-E-R-E.
G-E-R-E, okay.
Yeah.
Justin Gear, Richard's son, and an eighth grader, was complaining
Who's
to a...
Richard?
Richard Gear.
Oh.
I'm so sorry.
You're both dumb as shit.
I want to kill myself.
Oh, no. It's been a long week. Justin Gear was complaining to a couple of his friends that he had every major league baseball card issued that year except Carlisle Sparks, one of the Dodgers' rarely used relief pitchers. I don't know anything about baseball, so I don't know if that's an actual guy. Rumor was the card had never been printed because he sucked.
Why would you want it?
To complete the collection.
He doesn't sound like a good player.
Yeah. Well, wouldn't you know it, said Kevin Midas. I've got an extra one. He presented Carlisle Sparks to Justin as if he had pulled it out of his sleeve, which he had. Alyssa... I forgot how good all of the names in this book are. Alyssa Pivar was in tears because she had lost her charm bracelet down a deep storm drain that appeared to go all the way to China. That's not how they work. The bracelet was, of course, lost forever, but Kevin reached down into the drain and produced it, or at least a good replica. When Dash Kaminsky, the local police chief...
What?
No. When Dash Kaminsky, who the girls claimed was drop-dead gorgeous, got his million-dollar lips smashed... by a hockey puck, who was there with a handful of ice and a kind word that seemed to make the swelling go away in seconds? Kevin, of course.
Wait, did he smash his lips, or he was just there to help with ice, or both?
Dash Kaminsky got his lips, his million-dollar lips, smashed by a hockey puck.
What I'm wondering is, did he cause the smashing?
Oh.
Because he's jealous of Dash, and then is also like, "Here you go, Dash. I'm so sorry about your lips."
I think he just had the ice.
He's just being helpful with ice.
I think if he had caused
he has Munchausen's by proxy.
I think if he had caused the lip smashing, this book would have absolutely told us, like,
yeah, that's true.
Kevin is a monster. He did this. Dash Kaminsky. That's a good name.
Yeah.
In just a few days, Kevin's popularity had grown like a vine on the brickwork of Ridgeline Middle School, quickly and silently, so that very few people remembered it being any different. $1 million lips.
They're insured. Kevin had made the transition to everybody's buddy, and although he wasn't the most popular kid in school, people who would never have given him the time of day before suddenly said hello and didn't mind having him around. It was clear to Kevin that things were changing. He was changing. But changing wasn't the right word. He was becoming. Mm-hmm. Becoming what? He wondered. He decided it didn't really matter, because whatever it was better than what he had been before. A few other people noticed Kevin's frightening transformation. Josh was one. When Josh saw Kevin waltz in that Tuesday morning after their ill-fated shopping spree, he knew right away that Kevin wasn't going to give the glasses a rest. Josh, who had admittedly been a little greedmeister the day before, had learned his lesson when it was crammed down his throat. The glasses were bad news, period, but Kevin didn't get it. "The storm's still growing," Josh would often remind Kevin. "So, isn't there a drought?" Kevin would answer, letting the storm roll off the top of his head like water off Scotch Guard. Jesus. The truth was that the storm made the news every day. An inland hurricane was what they were now calling it. They named it Hurricane Gladys, but it should have been called Kevin. Bertram also noticed Kevin's new station in life. Bertram... Wait, oh, he was the bully. I forgot who Bertram was. Bertram would chew
How could you forget?
Bertram would chew his pink cud and watch and discuss as
Big League
Kevin,
chew.
His gum. Like, wasn't he eating?
Oh,
was
yeah.
Was it Big League Chew or did we just say
I think it was
said
Big League Chew.
Yeah.
Oh, pink cud.
Yes, and watch in disgust as Kevin actually chummed around with older, respectable kids. You know how children are respectable.
Yes, of course.
In Bertram's book, you were born into your place in life.
Damn, Bertram.
Bertram's place was well-guarded and well-worn. He knew who he was and what was expected of him. He was and would always be the mean kid, and he liked that just fine.
Oh, that's tragic.
You're 13, dude.
This book is written well.
It is.
I can't
crazy.
Believe. Yeah. Oh, man.
But it seemed Kevin had forgotten who he was.
Alrighty.
Should I finish this? Or
Chris, do that and then read that.
And I just want to let you know, while I was reading, Jonathan drew a picture of Dash Kaminsky in my notes.
Show Chris.
I will. I'll take a picture.
Kevin was the victim. He had been the victim since first grade, and someday in the far-off future, when Bertram was teaching his own kids all about being mean, Kevin Midas would be suffering some dumb life in some stupid, boring town, the victim of some big, stupid company that would fire him for no good reason.
Jesus.
Thoughts like this kept Bertram going. But seeing Kevin Midas succeeding, this didn't fit the Bertram worldview. It made him chomping mad. Kevin was wise to keep away from Bertram,
chomping.
And he did for 3 whole days. On Friday, however, the fine threads of Kevin's handmade universe began to unravel.
Good God.
I love this book.
It's so good.
Chapter 8. Kevin's Tangled Web.
God damn it.
Winds blew in from the north that Friday. Strange winds that swirled together, forming tiny candy wrapper tornadoes on the baseball field. It was all some distant effect of the inland hurricane, which still had meteorologists scratching their heads. These were the kinds of winds that stirred kids up, and like the others, Kevin had felt the itch of excitement like static electricity all morning.
Wait, sorry, I was drawing. Did Kevin cause the hurricane, or is this, like, just happenstance?
Yeah, no, I think it's up on the mountain, right? It's the storm that he created that he couldn't stop because Once you wish something, you can't unwish
it. Oh, so now it's a hurricane?
Yeah.
Holy fuck. Sorry, I was drawing Dash's million-dollar lips while that was happening.
Is this like a sparkle, like a...
Yes. Sparkle, yeah, yes. His lips are sparkling.
During lunch, Kevin
I
sat
like his
by...
sassy eyebrow.
During lunch, Kevin sat by himself beneath the flapping sails of a lunch table umbrella. The rest of the week, what? He had managed to surround himself with other kids, but since he was not producing an endless supply of goodies from his backpack today, no one was very
Do
interested
they have tables
in
tables outside with umbrellas?
That's a nice setup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't just have to bake in the sun like we did.
You got to go outside at lunch?
Oh, no, not at lunch.
We could go out. We had like an area we could go stand after we ate, but there weren't fucking tables out there like it was a bistro.
No, we didn't have outside.
We ate in the cafeteria, yeah. And then you could like stand on some walled in concrete to get a few minutes of vitamin D.
Does this take place in California? Because that feels like a California thing to do. Be like,
I think Pacific like Northwest.
Every movie I've ever seen of like a high school in California, they're always eating outside.
But they're not real. I mean, you can't base.
But they filmed them off of Clueless. At real schools. Those are real schools that they filmed them at.
But they're fake. They're movies. Clueless isn't real.
What?
The documentary Clueless isn't real.
Blowing my mind.
That was fine with Kevin because he had a plan to weave. He stared out into the baseball field where kids were sitting in small groups eating their lunches, and he thought long and hard. I'd like it a lot better if I could see your eyes, said Josh as he took a seat next to Kevin. What's so interesting out in right field? Kevin took off his glasses and squinted at Josh. Nicole Patterson. Forget her, advised Josh. She thinks you're a pinhead.
Oh, damn. Dare me, Josh, said Kevin. Dare me to go over and talk to her. I dare you, said Josh with a devious grin. Now, dare me to ask her out. Josh laughed, beginning to enjoy the game. I dare you to, he said. Kevin smiled. Remember, he said, you dared me.
Oh, God.
Kevin stood up and prepared himself for the excursion. I thought that said execution at first. I was like, fuck. His clothes.
Sure, we'll get there.
His clothes looked great. His shoes were tied. Good start. His nose was clean.
Women love that.
Excellent. And his armpits were about as fresh as they could be after a half a day at school.
And a morning jog.
Yeah. He was ready. What are you going to do if she says no? Oh, God. Kevin grinned. A grin as big as all outdoors. What? How could she resist a man in shades?
Ew.
He put his glasses back on. They
don't
hugged.
Like it anymore.
Not with that voice.
No.
They hugged his ears and nose, no longer slipping off, as if his head had swelled to fit them, or as if they had sized themselves down to make a perfect match with Kevin's face. With the glasses firmly stuck on Kevin's face, Josh was quick to catch on. Hold it, said Josh. Hold it a second. You're not planning to, you know, use the glasses on Nicole, are you, Kevin? Obviously, Josh... Obviously.
Yeah.
Kevin's all-outdoor smile seemed to wrap itself halfway around his head.
Ew.
Do you dare like me Venom. To? Yeah, he is like Venom. No, said Josh. I definitely do not dare you to. Kevin shrugged. Okay, then. I dare myself. Josh shook his head. I liked you better when you were a gutless wonder who got beaten up all the time. Ah, come on, Josh. If you were me, you'd be doing the same thing. No, if I were you, said Josh, as he got up to leave, I'd be scared. Real scared. Nicole Patterson was part of an eternal trio that also included Iris Beecham and Alexa Macalini.
McElhenney? Like Rob McElhenney?
No, Macolini.
Macolini?
Macolini. M-A-C-O.
Yeah, it sounds like a pasta.
Alexa Macolini! No?
I just need to see it to comprehend what you're saying.
They might as well have been born attached at the hip. Here, I'll leave it on this page so you can see how it's spelled. Macolini.
Oh, Macolini. Yeah.
Macolini and cheese. Yes,
Macolini. Yeah. Ah. The three of them, like all the other girls in school, were in love with Dan Kaminsky. I mean, Dash Kaminsky. My brain made it a normal name.
I was just going to say, if you don't say that for Dashiell,
fuck Dan
this
was
book.
His brother, who yeah. was also hot. Kevin imagined Good that genes. He was all they talked about when they sat down at lunchtime. Kevin approached and cleared his throat. Hey, you want to see a magic trick? The three girls turned to him as he approached. Not really, said Iris. It's a good one. Does it involve pulling your finger? Asked Alexa. I don't want to say her name. Can we have a code name for that name?
Yeah.
Charlotte.
I can't believe...
Well, no, your normal code times. Name. Just call her that dumb
no,
bitch.
Wait, now she's
now
saying
she
something.
Now she said it. Stop it. Alexa, cancel. Damn it.
Okay. Well, okay. We're going to call her that bitch.
That bitch.
The code name for that bitch in this house. Mm-hmm. No, nothing like that, said Kevin. I hold in my hand an ordinary. He looked down and then bent to pull up some sod. An ordinary lump of dirt, but watch closely. Kevin closed his fist on the dirt. The girls watched, but only because there was nothing better to do. I say the magic words, said Kevin. Abracadabra. Is this lame or what? Iris sneered. Shut up. This trick needs total concentration. Wow.
Damn.
You're really killing it, Damn. Kevin.
Girls love it when you tell them to shut up.
Kevin, said Nicole, I don't know if anyone has told you this, but you are truly weird.
That is how
Abracadabra, hocus pocus, alakazam, said Kevin. Wow, cool stuff. And cool. Presto, this clump of dirt is now a diamond. Kevin opened his palm to reveal a small blue diamond that sparkled coolly in the sun. The girl stared. How'd you do that? Asked that bitch. I know how he did it, said Nicole. He tricked us by making us look somewhere else while you switched the dirt for the diamond. It's called misdirection. I've seen the prestige. Yeah, said Kevin, closing his fist. But now the diamond is at the bottom of Iris's coke. How'd it get there? Where'd the lighter fluid come from? Kevin opened his palm and the diamond was gone. Iris shook her coke and something was indeed down there. She guzzled it all the way down until she came up with a diamond between her front teeth. I was thinking pour it on the ground, but okay.
You can't waste precious coke.
She spit it into her palm and studied it. It was the same diamond. Yeah, Nicole, how did it get there? Asked that dumb bitch. And then Nicole Patterson uttered a
you
phrase.
You can say it.
Kevin never believed he'd ever hear her say. I don't know. Kevin smiled and reached behind her ear. Another diamond, he said, pulling it out of this from the strands of her auburn hair. For you. He held it out to Nicole with such unashamed sincerity that Iris and Alexa had to break out in wicked laughter. Nicole, now poised on the jagged edge of sheer embarrassment, pushed Kevin's hand away. I don't want your dumb diamond, said Nicole. I just want to know how the other one got into Iris's coke. Yeah, said that dumb bitch. How did it get there?
It's not that dumb bitch, it's just that bitch.
Yeah, and also you can say it, because you don't have
but
one.
No, I'll Doesn't get confused matter. If he says it.
That's true. I also like the idea of like him giving these girls literal diamonds and then them going home and having to be like, I got a diamond today.
Mm-hmm. But... it's not like if somebody did a magic trick and was like, this dirt's a diamond now, I wouldn't be like, wow, a real fucking diamond.
That's true.
I'd be like, here's some garbage I can throw in the trash.
Here's a cubic zirconia.
It's about to get great.
Good.
Yeah, said Alexa, a.k.a. that bitch. How did it get there? A magician never tells, said Kevin smugly. Hey, said Iris, he's a magic midget. The others giggled. Kevin stiffened and bit his lip, but he refused to be humiliated. Not when he had come this far. The school bell rang, echoing off the handball court across the field. Kevin was running out of time. If he was going to do something, he'd have to do it soon. Iris pocketed her diamond. It's probably plastic anyhow, and the matter was closed. The girls shoved their sandwich wrappers into their lunch bags and prepared to go inside. Wait, said Kevin. I need to talk to you, Nicole. About what? Asked Iris. It's private. Iris and that bitch looked at each other and began to snicker. Oh, said Iris, that kind of talk. Will you two shut up, said Nicole. No, said Iris. That's okay. We'll leave you two alone.
No, wait, Nicole said desperately, but it was too late. Iris ran off with that bitch, both of them finding this unbearably funny. Nicole turned to Kevin. Great. Now you've just ruined my life. Now the whole school is going to think I actually like you. Well, don't you like me? Kevin dared to ask. I mean, just a little bit. No answer. Kevin tried again. Well, you don't hate me, do you? No, Nicole had to admit. Don't hate you. Kevin smiled. It was a start. Most of the kids had filtered back into the school. In a few moments, they would be completely alone. Just thinking like Dumb and Dumber. So you're telling me there's a chance.
There's a chance.
Men are stupid at every age. Kevin, this is too weird, said Nicole. I gotta go. As she turned to leave, Kevin tried to stop her by grabbing her shoulder. Instead, he got his hand...
Where?
Tangled in her long hair. Ow! Stop it! That hurts!
God.
Sorry! This wasn't going as smoothly as Kevin had planned. The second bell rang, and the school's steel doors closed with a heavy echoing thud.
Jesus. Like a vault?
Yeah, taking a kid's hand off in the process. Listen, said Nicole, why don't we both just go to class and pretend this never happened, okay?
And that's how first. She found out she liked having her hair pulled.
Oh, no, God. No. First, said Kevin, I want you to look me straight in the eye and tell me you don't like me. Nicole stared straight into Kevin's glasses and said, Kevin, I... But Kevin... didn't let her finish. You like me, said Kevin, and the glasses began to hum. The lenses went dark, and Kevin saw color swimming in Nicole's eyes. She was frozen, hypnotized, trapped in the invisible web Kevin had spun with his glasses. You like me better than any other boy in school, Kevin swore he could see right through her eyes, into her brain. Yeah. He could feel his mind spilling into hers. You want to go out with me more than anything else in the world. This is awful.
Yep.
Do you want a beer?
Yes.
Okay.
Nicole just stood there, unable to speak or move. Kevin could feel the glasses begin to strain. It seemed for an instant that the sun itself dimmed as the glasses pulled in all the energy they could to move Nicole's mind. A circle of fine frost appeared on the grass around them, and they were surrounded by a pocket of frigid air. Then it was over. The glasses rested, the cold air blew away, and Kevin, standing alone in the field with the dazed Nicole Patterson, dared to do the unimaginable. He pushed himself up on his tiptoes, leaned forward. Oh god, he has to get on his tiptoes. Leaned forward and planted on Nicole Patterson's lips the most remarkable kiss on school record, and they keep very tight records. In spite of the devious, underhanded
way,
like a guidance
Kevin counselor, like, ooh, that was a good one.
Yeah, with binoculars. In spite of the devious, underhanded way Kevin had brought this moment about, his kiss was from the heart. It was the kiss he had always wished he could give Nicole. When Kevin pulled away, Nicole just stared at him, lost in whatever place it is people get lost in when they've just received such an intensely sincere kiss. But then her lips began to curl, and her eyebrows furrowed. She shivered and blinked, shaking off the spell, snapping out of the trance. She reached out to grab Kevin's shoulders, and for an instant he thought she was coming back for more. But instead she pushed him away with superhuman strength. What the fuck? Oh my god. There's just so many consonants. Ugh, she said. Ugh, black, blah, ugh. She ran the back of her hand across her lips. Salami, she said. Yuck, bleh. She turned on Kevin in such fury, he could only cower from her rage. Why, you creep, she said. You little troll. You think you can just hypnotize me? Kevin was speechless. He kept opening his mouth to say something, but nothing came out. What went wrong? The glasses were all powerful, weren't they? Nicole threw her lunch bag at him, and an apple core fell out, bouncing off Kevin's hair. You can take your dumb plastic diamond and your stupid glasses and your salami kisses and flush them for all I care.
What a great page.
Yeah.
What a great page.
Writing down salami kisses.
Oh no, what did I miss?
Oh my god, so she was under the spell for like a second and seemed to have broken out of it.
Oh man.
And he smooched had salami her. For lunch.
Ew, no.
You had this coming, you bozo, said a voice inside Kevin's head. You deserve this. You're a tiny-minded, tiny-bodied, pin-headed dweeb of a shrimpoid nerd. Yeah. Nicole wiped her mouth again. The pressure on Kevin now was unbearable. All the humiliation, all the rejection. He felt on the verge of some frightening explosion, the way a dwarf star blows up into a supernova. You're the shortest, creepiest, dwarfiest little midget on the face of the earth, shouted Nicole.
Oh, Nicole.
Kevin could stand it no longer. Oh, yeah, he screamed, and that's when Kevin, the dwarf star, went Nova.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Oh,
sometime God. Later, Mr. Kirkpatrick was
Nicole
out sick
laid
that
dead.
Day. Mr. Kirkpatrick was out sick that day, down with a cold he had picked up at the Divine Watch. The substitute was a mealy-looking woman in polyester whose name was so ridiculously long and unpronounceable she herself had problems trying to spell it when she wrote it on the board. What in the end, she advised the students just to call her Ms. Q.
What does mealy-looking mean?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I guess gross.
Okay.
Ms. Q was trying to rein in the terror when Kevin Midas walked in. The classroom was raging with arguments and spitball wars that showed no signs of stopping. Please simmer down, Ms. Q said to the meltdown situation before her. I'm taking roll. Kevin slithered into his seat, and Josh, who sat just across the aisle, watched him. Kevin, you don't look too good, he said. Kevin imagined that if he took off the glasses, Josh would see in his eyes just how not good things were. Kevin ever so gently put his backpack on his desk.
In the front of the room, Nicole's seat was empty. Josh noticed it right away. Fuck. Where's Nicole? He asked Kevin. Kevin didn't know exactly how he should answer that question.
Oh my god.
This...
I'm fucking terrified.
This is awful. Kevin... Kevin? Josh asked again. What did you do to Nicole? She called me a midget, said Kevin. And... She called me a shrimpoid. And I sort of got mad. Where is Nicole? Kevin didn't say anything. Instead, he nodded his head toward his backpack. Oh my god, no. The light bulb went on in Josh's head. No, said Josh. You didn't. But before Kevin could answer, his backpack was snatched off his desk. The ball is in play, yelled Bertram as Kevin's pack became the prime object hurtling around the room. No! Screamed Kevin. If there was ever a time not to play keep away with Kevin's backpack, this was it. Kevin, as pale as... Becca looks distraught.
I am.
Did he shrink her?
Yes! Of course he did.
I was thinking just like fucking... Like, broke her up in a bunch of little pieces.
Oh, no, I think he
smashed her up and killed her.
She was like, you're so small, you're tiny. Oh,
so he made her tiny.
So he probably made her tiny and stuck her in his backpack.
Okay, I still hate it.
Oh, no, it's bad. It's bad. Kevin, as pale as the cloud-covered sky, leapt out of his seat in absolute terror. The backpack flew in the air, and Hal, in the back of the room, caught it. I'm giving you 5 seconds to settle down, said Miss Q. Kevin reached Hal, only to watch helplessly as Hal threw the pack to Bertram again. Kevin reached Bertram, and the pack flew again. Bertram laughed and bit down on his gum wad, squirting bubblegum juice in Kevin's face.
That's not how gum works.
No, it's not. That's it, yelled Ms. Q, picking up the phone by the chalkboard. I'm calling the office! But the joke was on her. That phone hadn't worked since the school started.
God.
I mean, damn. He has god glasses. Why isn't he just, like, pointing at whoever has his backpack and saying, shit yourself, shit yourself,
yeah.
Shit yourself.
Yeah. Bertram grabbed the pack by one thin strap and dangled it out the second story window.
Oh, my,
oh
god.
My god.
You don't know what you're doing, screamed Kevin. Come on, Midas, come and get it, said Bertram brainlessly. Toro, Toro! Kevin climbed Bertram's arm as if it were the limb of a tree. Bertram pulled the pack in from the window and prepared to hurl it across the room once more. What Kevin did next came as a complete surprise to him as well as Bertram. He simply had to get that pack back, so he hauled off and belted Bertram right in the face.
Holy
shit. The pack fell out of Bertram's hands, and Kevin caught it before it hit the ground. Now the room was a three-ring circus, raging fully out of control. In one corner, a slapping fight had turned into a brawl. In the center ring, a chorus of kids were performing armpit farts, and by the window, Bertram was reeling from Kevin's blow.
So there's just like a separate brawl happening.
There's just a whole bunch of other stuff happening unrelated.
Yeah. Just, he punched Bertram and the kids are like, riot!
Rumble!
Ms. Q chose to break up the brawl in the corner and drag those two kids out in the hall for a reprimand, leaving the rest of the circus without a ringmaster. Bertram's lip had been cut against the sharp track of his braces, and his teeth were covered with blood, as if he'd just bitten a chunk out of someone, or as if he cut his mouth like you just said he did. The chainsaw look filled Bertram's face. Maybe we established that earlier, and
I don't think we did.
And Kevin knew there was no escape. He carefully handed Josh his backpack. Don't let anyone near her, said Kevin. The second the backpack was out of his hands, Bertram's foot made contact with Kevin's butt, sending him flying across the room. You made me bleed, yelled Bertram.
You made me bleed my own blood.
Kevin scrambled to his feet, and Bertram stepped on Kevin's toes, firmly pinning his to the ground.
Toes. Right?
I know, but why not firmly pinning them to the ground? The toes.
I don't know. It's poetic.
No, it's not. Who do you think you are? Screamed Bertram. You get a pair of glasses and all of a sudden you think you're the king of the world. He pushed Kevin down, but since his feet were pinned under Bertram's, Kevin came bouncing back like a Bobo doll?
That's not how it works.
I think you just, like, break your ankles.
Yeah, you just fall.
I don't know what a Bobo doll is.
Don't make him mad, Bertram warned Josh. Why? What's he gonna do? Bertram pushed Kevin down over and over again, and Kevin just kept trying to scramble away. He didn't want to fight Bertram. He had better things to do, and this was making him furious. Hadn't the day been screwed up enough? I'll teach you to make me bleed, said Bertram, and with that he spat his gum into his free hand and smeared it across the top of Kevin's head. He kicked Kevin's legs out from under him, and Kevin fell to the floor, his hair impossibly snarled with Bertram's gum. Bertram laughed. He had won. Just like always. You're just a loser, Midas, he said, looking down at Kevin. That's all you'll ever be, a loser. With every bit of his body aching, Kevin gritted his teeth in anger and spoke to Bertram with a deadly growl that seemed to climb up from the pit of his stomach. Go to hell, Bertram,
oh, no,
said Kevin. And the glasses began to swirl with color.
No.
It all took place so quickly. No. Everyone was caught off guard, and no one was sure what really happened. No one but Kevin, that is, who saw everything in 3D Technicolor. The ground beneath Bertram's feet tore open, and flames brighter than lightning leapt out, wrapping around him like tentacles, pulling him downward. There was a faraway hollow sound, a distant chorus of wailing voices that blended with Bertram's wail as he fell. He grabbed for a chair and took the chair with him. Bertram slipped into the fiery mouth as it swallowed him whole. Kevin caught sight of Bertram's eyes as he dropped into the pit. Then Bertram was gone, and the hole that had split open the wooden floor vanished as if it had never existed. This book
is
amazing.
Hell is real.
Hell is real. A kid just sent a kid to
hell. Or maybe he created it by, maybe he willed it into existence.
Oh my god, he made hell.
A kid just went to hell. A child just went to hell.
Not went. A kid was just sent to hell.
A kid was sent to hell.
There's a few people I'd like to do that to.
This is nuts. Oh my god.
Oh my god.
All that was left. And here I was thinking, Kevin was going to say, like, I wish you were dead, and then a person would die. This seems worse. This seems way worse.
Yeah.
To me. All that was left of Bertram was the echo. And okay, also, like, a cl- classroom full of kids just watched hell open up and take Bertram
while their teacher was away.
Where did Bertram go? The devil got him.
Where he belonged.
All that was left of Bertram was the echo of a distant cry that soon became nothing more than the moaning of the wind. And then silence. Everything was exactly the way it was before. The only thing missing was a chair and Bertram. It all happened in the blink of an eye, and kids were still turning their heads to see what that flash of light was. Ms. Q came running back into the room. "What was that?" she asked. "Spontaneous human combustion!" screamed Ralphie Sherman, flapping his arms like a crazy pigeon. "Spontaneous human combustion!" Ms. Q dragged Ralphie straight to the principal's office. Chapter 9.
Oh my god.
Out of mind.
I'll fuck, say.
Fuck me. This is awesome.
Yeah, that was great.
Holy shit, guys. The rest of the afternoon seemed to unfold around Kevin and Josh like one of their school plays. They were part of the production, but hid so far upstage that no one noticed them. They kept their mouths tightly shut and watched. At first, there was some confusion about Bertram's disappearance in Ms. Q's unruly classroom, until someone claimed to have seen Bertram run down the hall. Yeah,
because
that's what
school
happened.
School is hell.
Yeah, school is. That's what happened, said someone else. Couldn't think of a name. You thought of a million good ones so far. You ran out. Before long, everyone just figured Bertram had cut class, a common enough occurrence, and he'd turn up eventually. Only Hal protested, and no one ever listened to Hal, and they weren't about to start listening now. That stupid Texan. God. Kevin suffered through the rest of the day with ice-cold shaking hands and spoke to no one. I wish the glasses would stop working, he desperately whispered to himself, hiding alone in a bathroom stall between classes, but the glasses just vibrated and buzzed like feedback through the auditorium microphone, growing hotter and hotter until Kevin had to fling them from his face.
The glasses are like, fuck you!
Yeah, the glasses are like, I'll never stop existing, you little
bitch! I'll never die!
I feel like the glasses are yes, send more people to hell.
Right? Yeah. That's where I want them to go.
I used to be a monkey's paw. But you gotta change with the times.
You gotta change. You gotta do what's cool these days. The sleek visor blade had power over everything. What? The sleek visor blade had power over everything except itself. Wishing them to stop was about as useless as wishing it had never happened.
Has he tried that? I mean, we don't know.
Well, he just did.
He said he wished the glasses didn't work anymore.
And he didn't wish it never happened.
Also, like, there's a tiny girl in his backpack.
Yes. I need that to resolve.
Yeah, please.
Kevin shuffled around for the rest of the day with a pale green face that grew greener every time he thought of Bertram or Nicole. But for the rest of the school, it was business as usual. The bells rang, kids were shuffled around the school like a deck of cards, and eventually both Bertram and Nicole were lost in the shuffle. Forgotten. Out of sight, out of mind, thought Kevin. It was much truer than he could know. What? Sometime later. After school, Josh spent a good angry hour blasting Kevin for being such an idiot. Bertram deserved to have his head flushed in a toilet or to be strung up the flagpole by his underwear, but he didn't deserve what you did, said Josh. And you should never have tried to control Nicole's mind. I bet there's not enough energy in the whole universe to control a mind that stubborn.
Oh, wow.
But it was done. And no amount of raving by Josh could undo anything. Habit trail? What? Rested on Kevin's bedroom desk? What the fuck is that?
What?
Someone Google it.
Habit trail?
Habit trail. Like habit and trail, but one word.
One word?
With one T in the middle.
Habit
he had
trail.
Gotten it for Christmas the year before, but ever since Terry Snake...
Two words or one?
One. Yeah, this is not... The context isn't helping me understand.
Oh, it's like a hamster.
Hamster.
Thing.
Oh, it's one of these things. It's like a little hamster tube
like a
city.
Hamster house?
But like a whole...
Like a hamster tube city.
Like a hamster... Yeah, like a hamster tube city.
Okay. He had gotten it for Christmas the year before, but ever since Terry's snake found its way into their mother's jewelry box, animals that could fit in drawers were not allowed in the Midas home, so the habit trail had never been used. So they bought the habit trail without a hamster to put in it?
I guess so.
Also, it's like, oh, we got a sister's snake, and we're going to get him the prey for that snake.
Right? Yeah, right?
I was assuming that's where it was going. The snake just got near jewelry, so then all tiny pets were banished.
That's really like unlocking a memory for me also, because I never had those things, but yeah. I desperately wanted to have like a little tube like system in my, like, not just room, but like in my house. Like, mm-hmm. I remember as a kid, I had...
Do you have diagrams?
I didn't, I probably did actually, or I probably did draw diagrams. My brothers had hamsters growing up. I never had a hamster, I think because we learned that hamsters are stupid, and yeah. like they got loose and like one of them died of fright.
We had guinea pigs.
Yeah, we had guinea pigs too. We never had a hamster.
I never had guinea pigs, but I had rats. And I wanted to like build a little tube, and rats are really smart, and like they can actually like go through mazes and shit. And I
one of my guinea pigs was really smart, and my dad taught him like a little obstacle course. Like, he would do different stuff with like pillows and shit on the couch, and the guinea pig, his name was Sugar, would run across the obstacle course. He was really smart.
Would you sit there going like, go Sugar, go?
Sure,
that's so cute. Anyway, I really wanted like a little, yeah, I wanted the habit trail, but I wanted like a big intricate one.
Yeah,
I never did.
Well,
I had a ferret.
I don't want it now.
I know. I was going to say we can get one now, but I don't want that.
I don't want that. No.
But like a similar situation to like the mom finding a snake in her jewelry box. Like when I was a kid, we went on a vacation to Ohio and we caught a bunch of tadpoles and we brought them back and we put them in the aquarium we had that was empty, mm-hmm. but was running and filtered. And there was no top to the aquarium. And when you have that many tadpoles, at some point you're gonna have a shitload of frogs in your house.
Yep. No one thought to put a top on it at some point.
And that sounds like a really fun morning though.
Well, my mom did daycare.
Did you get that frogs jump?
My mom did daycare, so it was like a teaching thing for them.
Yes.
And but like it backfired extraordinarily.
Mm. Good.
The kids are like, why do they all have legs?
Oh, man.
That's yeah, I think great. It was, like, months, and they were still fighting frogs.
I'm also just remembering, like, I think the reason my mom probably said no to, like, getting those tubes, and why I'm thinking now as, like, an adult, like, oh, I don't want that, is because they'd get filled with shit.
Yeah.
There would just be poop in all of it.
Poop tubes.
Just poop. They would just turn into poop tubes. It was bad enough dealing with that in just one container.
Yeah. Okay, habit trail. Kevin supposed his mother wouldn't approve of this either. Oh, I don't really know what's happening now. I got really lost in the stories we were telling. Okay,
this is uninteresting to me now.
There's
that
a habit trail on
hell.
His desk. Oh yeah. My fucking god. Oh my god. Oh my god.
What? What?
Resting on a pile of cedar chips in the habit trail was Nicole Patterson.
No, 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 no.
Somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 inches tall.
No. Kevin.
So he's had this fucking thing for a year or whatever and has had cedar chips in it this whole time and no fucking hamster in there. Just like rotten old cedar chips that now a girl is in.
This is more upsetting than all of the incest in every Christopher Pike.
This book has ceased has never ceased to disappoint.
All I can think of is Huey in our first reading, knowing this was coming for us and not being able to say anything.
Incredible, the restraint that just took.
The thought that he had to sit there knowing that there was going to be a 6-inch tall girl in a hamster cage. And he couldn't tell us.
I just texted him. Like
what
a couple
did you say?
I texted him and I said, dude, we're currently reading more of Kid Midas and a kid just got all caps sent to hell. And then a separate text, all caps, literal hell.
Yeah.
I'm dying for him to respond.
Holy
because
shit.
That son of a bitch knew.
You knew, Huey.
You knew.
Oh my god. She was sound asleep. Kevin had put her into a deep sleep the moment he had wished her small.
Oh, okay.
Like, I wish you were small! And I wish you were asleep.
Okay. At least, like, kudos to Kevin for thinking, because, like, thank God she doesn't have to experience this.
He's gonna fucking wake her up eventually, I'm sure.
Oh, God.
He's not just gonna have a tiny unconscious girl. I don't
fucking know. It's my tiny girlfriend.
Oh, my God.
Where you wouldn't know her. She goes to a different, much smaller school.
Yeah. But she was bound to wake up sooner or later. But that is contradictory to his, once you wish something, you can't unwish it.
Yeah.
Unless he said, I wish you slept for 10 hours.
I'll figure it out by then.
Yeah. Well, said Kevin, it could be worse. I could have turned her into a shrimp. Yeah, said Josh. I'm sure she'll thank you when she wakes up. Kevin looked down in shame.
Rightfully so.
As he should. Right. I can't believe you put her in a fucking hamster cage.
You ought to use those glasses to wish your lips into a zipper so you can shut your full mouth, said Josh.
But then he'd be able to unzip them.
Shut your full mouth.
Your full mouth. I do like that.
Kevin nodded. I deserve that. Damn right, said Josh. You deserve a lot worse, but I don't know what. The glasses were now in Kevin's shirt pocket, and he touched them with his right hand as if pledging allegiance. He longed to put them on and feel their weight on the bridge of his nose. The glasses would take away the shame and the fear. They would make him feel strong and untouchable. Now all he felt was weak and empty. Every time he took those glasses off, they seemed to take a chunk of his soul with them.
Damn. Can't he also see without glasses? It's like the idea that he's like...
Oh, right.
Got the glasses in his pocket, but, like, he's just blind.
Sometime later.
He needs some glasses.
Yeah.
At about 5 o'clock, Nicole woke up. Kevin and Josh, instantly chickens, dove to the ground and hid without making as much as a single cluck. That's funny. What the? Nicole looked around. All right, very funny. Now let me out.
Now, here's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Does she have a tiny little voice because she's tiny? Yeah, exactly.
Chris.
What the? All right. Very funny. Now, let me out. That's way better.
Kevin peeked to see Nicole stay. Oh, wait. No, hold on. I'm going to do that again.
But it was really
what the?
Nicole looked around.
All right. Very funny. Now, let me out.
Kevin peeked to see Nicole standing on the red running wheel that was normally reserved for small rodents.
Kevin Midas, said Nicole. I should have known it was you. There better not be any hamsters in here.
No, said Kevin. Just you. She yawned.
What time is it?
She looked down at the microscopic Mickey Mouse on her wrist.
Oh no! I missed gymnastics! I'd better get home or my parents will kill me.
But,
what?
Nicole, said Josh, climbing out from underneath the desk.
But,
you
Nicole.
Can't go home in your, condition.
What condition?
Doesn't she said notice Nicole. That they're, like, 10 stories tall?
She just made, she just said something about hamsters.
Yeah.
She must know she's tiny in a hamster cage.
What kind of weird joke is this?
Kevin grimaced. Was she so bewildered that she didn't know what was wrong? Nicole, said Kevin, you may not have noticed this, but you're very, very small.
I can't do that voice that you're doing, so I'm just going to do...
You start with Meatwad and then go from there.
I can't do Meatwad. I don't want to try and do Meatwad. I tried to do Meatwad one time and it backfired.
I don't even know what Meatwad sounds like.
He sounds like what Chris is doing.
Okay.
I will kill for a ton spoon.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not small, I'm petite.
That's a great she voice. Said.
I like it.
There's a big difference. And besides, there are no small people, all these small vines.
Except for you, you shrimpoid.
Except for you, you fucking shrimpoid piece of shit loser. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you and your butt.
Alright. Damn, Nicole.
Nicole hopped off the running wheel and came right up to the plastic wall of the cage.
I really wanted her to run on the wheel.
Me too. Give it time. She looked straight into Kevin's right eye, which to her must have seemed the size of a classroom globe.
Joke's over,
she said.
I have to get home.
Something's wrong with this, thought Kevin. She's acting...
That would be a lot bigger than that. It doesn't matter.
She's acting... Well, she's acting like Nicole, not like the victim of a freak miniaturization.
Is that in the book?
Yes. Okay. That is what it looks like. That's what the book says. Kevin looked at Josh, who just shrugged, and so Kevin did as he was asked. He let Nicole out.
Where's your phone?
Both Kevin and Josh pointed dumbly to the phone sitting across the desk and watched as Nicole climbed over a book, nearly losing a shoe in a sticky old soda stain,
ew,
then climbed the face of the phone and heaved the receiver out of its cradle. I don't get it, said Josh. Is she in shock or something? Doesn't she care that she's been Barbie-fied? Nicole went about her business, her little business, jumping on the phone buttons to dial them as if she did this every day. I don't get it either, said Kevin. Nicole knelt by the receiver as her mother answered the other end.
Hello? Hi, Mom, it's me,
said Nicole in that squeaky, mousy voice.
Nicole?
Said her mother, confused and startled by the strange sound of Nicole's voice. There was silence for a moment, but then Mrs. Patterson's confusion quickly passed away. Too quickly, Kevin thought.
Thank God you're all right. You had us all worried, little lady. Emphasis on little. We had no idea where you were.
I'm at a friend's house, explained Nicole. I forgot to call.
What the fuck is happening?
I don't know. Maybe everyone just knows that she's small and is like, yeah, she's always been small.
Oh, she was doing a squeaky, bouncy voice. I was Googling how tall Barbies were while you were talking to us. I was saying Barbies are actually almost 12 inches tall. We'll talk about
it. More like a G.I. Joe.
Are they
like
half,
a later G.I. Joe.
Half the size of Barbies? I don't know how big G.I. Joes are.
Well, original G.I. Joes were 12 inches tall. And then like the 90s G.I. Joes were... like,
I want to say four. Small.
Actually, shorter than 6 inches. They were like,
I want to say so 4 inches.
Yeah, plastic.
Plastic?
I mean,
answer.
Like, save money.
Plastic.
Make more of them. Sell more.
Okay. We'll talk about it when you get home, said her mother sternly. Nicole sighed. I'll be there as soon as I can. Good, said her mother. And watch out for cats on the way home.
She's about the size of, like, one of my...
Did you hear that?
Sorry, Code. I'm just looking at my Resident Evil...
Yeah,
my,
those
my
are, like, 6 inches.
Resident Evil action figures. So cool. Yeah, she's about the size of, say, Jill Valentine.
Okay, you should bring Jill cats over here to here. Sit with us.
Jill, you're going to be Nicole.
Yeah, so he straight up alters reality to where it, like,
yeah,
it had always
just...
been this way.
So, Nicole's this big. She's gonna sit with us.
She's gonna sit with us. Okay. Kevin hung up the phone for her. Cats? He thought. Did she say watch out for cats? You see the trouble you got me in? Oh, ew, okay. You see the trouble you got me in? I'll do this voice. Wasn't your salami kiss bad enough? Now you have to kidnap me too? Josh perked up. You kissed her? There was no time for Kevin to answer, for just then his door sprang open with a bang, and Terry stormed in, unannounced, as she often did. Moron police, she said. All morons, present ID. I fucking love her.
That's pretty solid. Moron police.
Then she stopped dead, coming face to face with the Barbie-fied Nicole. Terry's jaw dropped dumbly, making her look like the only actual moron in the room. Mm. Silence hung in the air like the Hindenburg.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Kevin braced for the explosion, but it didn't happen. Yes, for a moment, terror and confusion filled Terry's eyes, but then Terry blinked, and the terror vanished. It was as though her whole brain had adjusted to accept what she was seeing, just as Nicole's mom had adjusted to the voice she was hearing over the phone. Hi, Nicole, said Terry, as if everything in the world was perfectly
what
fine.
The fuck?
Nicole waved. Hi, Terry! Hi. Yeah, hi, Terry. Tell your brother that he's a waste of valuable protoplasm. I would, but I think he already knows. Terry sauntered out of the room as quickly as she had entered. Better hope I don't tell Mom you're hiding a girl in your room. And then Terry disappeared into her own room. Why does this feel sticky, by the way?
Oh, it's just, it's because, like...
Why is Jill sticky?
They're all sticky. Because, like, the plastic that they used over time with, like, dust or something. I don't know.
Here, she can sit with me.
Yeah.
Well, she's...
They're very hard to clean. They didn't think very well ahead.
Why is your Jill Valentine doll sticky, Jonathan?
I just explained why.
I didn't think you'd still have her when you were almost 40.
A likely excuse.
No, I thought I would still have her.
Which is why she's sticky.
Hold on. What is this? Cried Josh. Has the whole world gone schizo? And then the truth swung itself at Kevin with such fury that his brain was launched into deep, deep left field.
Okay.
So many fucking metaphors.
Yeah.
He suddenly understood. Kevin coughed out his wind, and no amount of rapid breathing could bring it back.
Excuse me. Is that what happens when you have a realization? You're just like.
Excuses, Nicole. He grabbed Josh by the shirt and pulled him out into the hallway, still unable to catch his breath. Talk to me, Kev, said Josh. Don't just stand there like a fish gulping air. Kevin grabbed Josh by the shoulders.
Josh is from another time.
Yeah, Josh is a newsie.
He is.
Talk to me, Kev. Don't just stand there like a fish gulping air.
Yes.
Kevin grabbed Josh by the shoulders and looked him right in the eye. Josh, how tall was Nicole yesterday? She was normal, Kevin. Oh, no, she was normal, Kevin. You remember what normal is, don't you? About 3 inches taller than you? Okay, said Kevin. Now close your eyes and try to remember that. Try to remember the last time you saw her looking normal. Josh closed his eyes, and after a few moments, his eyebrows wrinkled and nodded. I can't. I can't picture it. Okay, said Kevin. Now tell me what happened to Bertram. Josh took a step away from Kevin. He rubbed his arms as if he were cold. You sent him to the land down under. And what did Bertram look like?
That's what I'm calling it forever now.
Yeah.
And what did Bertram look like? Josh thought for a moment, and his eyebrows knotted up again. Well, he had braces. What else? Josh stammered a bit. What else? Give me a minute. What about his hair? His eyes? How tall was he? I don't know. I can't remember, so just shut up about it, okay? See? Josh looked terrified, and Kevin knew why. It was as if someone had yanked something out of their heads. It was like that old trick of pulling a tablecloth out from underneath a perfectly set table. Everything looked fine, but something was missing.
I don't understand that, though, about Bertram, because it's not like you're saying, I wish you never existed and also were in hell.
Yeah.
He existed up until that point and then was sent to hell. You'd still remember him.
Still remember him. You're just like, oh, yeah, Bertram.
Yeah, he's that kid that went to hell.
That kid that went to hell.
That dickhead that went to hell.
Yeah.
He was so awful, he went to hell.
And then everyone clapped.
Obviously. I remember him. Josh couldn't remember, and neither could Kevin. If he tried really hard, he could remember Bertram's voice or part of his face or the smell of his gum. But the memories were fading, becoming harder and harder to find. What did you do, Kevin? My God, what did you do? I think, said Kevin, I think I've changed the rules somehow. Josh scowled at him, trying to understand. It's like, you know, when you're dreaming, first you're in your house, and then suddenly you're at school, and then suddenly you're at the mall in your underwear, but no one notices, not even you. Because while you're dreaming, you don't notice when things don't make sense. You don't notice when the rules change, you know? Josh's lips started to quiver. He was breathing fast, too, and Kevin knew that he was beginning to understand. Kevin slipped the glasses out of his pocket and put them on. His whole body surged with warmth. See, Josh, if I were to say something like 2 + 2 = 3, then suddenly it would be true and no one would know any better. Josh reached out and plucked the glasses from Kevin's face. They made a suction sound as they came off, like a snail being pulled off a window.
You know, that sound everyone knows.
You know how we're all besieged by window snails?
Window snails are the worst.
How big would a snail have to be to actually make a suction noise? That would have to be like a handful of
snails. Like a snail this big.
I imagine it would be like a splorch.
Splork?
Yeah.
When I first got the glasses, Josh, they just made things. But now that I've had practice and I've gotten better at it, the glasses are doing even more. Now the glasses are remaking the rules. They're reimagining the universe. They both glanced into Kevin's bedroom where Nicole was bouncing on an eraser as if it were a miniature trampoline. So no one's going to notice that anything strange about Nicole being 6 inches tall? Asked Josh. No one. They'll just look right past it and not give it a second thought, like it's normal. And it's the same with Bertram. Pretty soon, Bertram's going to be completely gone.
No one will remember he ever existed, not even his own parents. Nobody but you and me.
He sucked.
Why me? Asked Josh. If you're the one changing the rules, how come I know something's wrong? But Josh answered his own question. It's because I was there with you when you found the glasses, isn't it? Kevin nodded. We're in this together. Josh looked at the glasses, which were still in his hands. Kevin's tone changed. I'd like them back, please, said Kevin.
Ooh, uh-oh.
Josh's back, grip Josh. Tightened on the lenses. Maybe I should keep them for you, so there's no more trouble. Kevin reached out a hand, and his fingers closed around the glasses as well. Let go, Josh.
Oh, God.
They stood there facing off, neither of them letting go. Jump ball, said Josh with a nervous chuckle. What the fuck does that mean? What? Jump ball?
Two words?
Two words, jump ball.
I don't know.
Yep.
Let go, Josh. There was something in Kevin's voice, something so commanding that Josh couldn't fight it. Josh let go and his shoulder sagged. I wonder if it was the glasses' power, even when he was just touching them.
He's God now.
Kevin shoved the glasses back into his shirt pocket, and Josh rubbed his hands on his pants as if trying to wipe off invisible blood. I'm an accessory, said Josh, with bitter resignation. An accessory to the crime! Sometime later, Kevin saw Nicole to the door. He offered to walk her home, but she wouldn't allow it. I'm fine by myself, said Nicole. Cats are stupid anyway. As she stood on his palm before Kevin let her down to the ground, she took a long look at him. You know, said Nicole.
It's going to take her forever to get home.
You should have waited. Huh?
You should have waited, but you should have waited before your
customer. I don't like that voice. I like the other voice.
It was a really dumb thing to do. You should have waited till we were, like, going out or something.
Kevin set her gently down on the sidewalk. But you'd never go out with me. Nicole shrugged. You never asked me. Then she turned and began the long, long walk back to her house 4 blocks away.
I want to spend every second on that walk home with her.
Her fighting a praying mantis.
Yes.
Are we still going?
Flying on the back of a crow.
Still going?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Chapter 10. Specters.
I don't ever want to stop.
In the dark. Kevin told himself he wouldn't use them again. No matter how miserable he felt without the glasses on his face, he swore he'd stop once and for all. Yet as he lay in bed that night, thoughts of the glasses pushed everything else out of his aching head. He knew where they were, so close, sitting there in his shirt pocket, hung on the back of his desk chair. It wouldn't hurt just to look at them, thought Kevin. So he heaved his cold, shaking body out of bed, took the glasses from his shirt, and set them open on his desk, about a foot away from the wall outlet. The glasses had already drained the heat from the room, but it wasn't enough. They sat there, spent and powerless, just like Kevin, in a room that had become as cold as winter. Now the blade of the lenses was a dull, foggy gray, like cheap plastic that had been washed too many times. In a moment, an arc of blue electricity bridged the cold air between the glasses and the outlet. It looked like one of those mad scientific devices in old monster movies. Kevin slipped under his blankets and watched. It wouldn't hurt to let the glasses charge up just a little, he thought. Only they didn't charge just a little. They charged a lot. For half an hour, Kevin watched and listened to the gently crackling electrical hum while everyone else slept.
Soon the glasses looked perfect again. The smooth visor blade was sharp and shiny, as perfect and pure as a diamond. They sat there waiting patiently for Kevin. Now Kevin longed more than ever to have the cold and the emptiness he felt chased away by the glasses. If I wore them for just a second, it couldn't hurt, he thought. Could he bear that, wearing them for just a second? Of course he could. Then he could put them back in his shirt pocket. That's what he'd do. He reached out, crooked his finger, and grabbed the glasses, just as he had the first time when he had seen them on the mountain. He slipped them onto his face. Instantly, the icy night rolled over into a thick, warm quilt for Kevin to wrap himself in, protecting him from anything hidden in the shadows. He stretched and let the warmth relay down his spinal column until it pulsed in his fingers and toes. How good it was to feel so warm, so safe, and so comfortable. How could he ever want to feel differently? Still wearing the glasses, Kevin felt sleep begin to pull him down with caressing hands. He gave no resistance. Kevin opened his eyes sometime later, deep into the night, hearing the distant sound of metal against metal, a rattling sound. A tilt of the head told him that the sound came from the left side of his room, more specifically, his closet. Kevin sat up and walked what seemed to be twice the usual distance, noticing the sickly sweet aroma of overripe fruit. Pushed by curiosity, he reached for the knob and turned it. The door creaked open to reveal a place that bore no resemblance to Kevin's closet.
Did he open the door to hell and went to the bathroom?
He's fucking dreaming with the glasses on, so he's gonna make some crazy dream shit happen.
I think so.
Bertram was in the same clothes he wore the moment he was sucked out of the world, only now they were drenched in sweat. Yes, now I remember what he looked like, was the first thought that flashed in Kevin's mind. Then the shock and horror followed it in like thunder. Bertram lunged at Kevin in fury, only to be choked back by the chains. Heavy black chains circled his legs, arms, and neck, rattling like iron bones. They were fastened securely to a jagged wall of steaming black shiny stone, which had replaced the walls of Kevin's closet.
This is some straight up Hellraiser shit.
The glass-like obsidian shimmered, reflecting fires unseen. It was exactly what Kevin imagined hell to be like, except for the fish.
What?
Bertram's hell had fish everywhere. They flopped at his feet, they slithered down the wall,
right. Is he, like, terrified
and into
of
his
fish?
Shirt. I think so, yes. And they all smelled like used fruity bubble gum. It must have been Bertram's worst nightmare, but he loves gum.
Yeah, but he hates fish.
But wouldn't them smelling like gum be a little nicer?
Oh, no.
You're dead, Midas, screamed Bertram. You're dead when I catch you. You're gonna pay. And then Bertram's face changed. He wasn't a grimacing demon anymore, but a terrified 13-year-old boy. Please, he whispered desperately. Please, Kevin, help me. I'm scared. Please.
Jesus.
I'm sorry, cried Kevin. I didn't mean it. I didn't even know there really was a hell. Bertram changed again. His face twisted into a snarl, and he lunged forward like a madman, only to be choked back once more by chains that seemed strong enough to hold a dinosaur. The biggest thing you could possibly imagine. You idiot, growled Bertram. You made this place. Ooh, you were right. You made it for me.
Oh, yeah.
He created hell,
yeah.
Kevin knew it was the truth. Whatever other places there might be, in and out of the universe, this particular hell was invented just for Bertram.
The rage left Bertram's eyes again, and once more he was just a kid. He began to cry.
Please, Kevin, please, I'll be nice to you. I'll be your friend. Just please get me out of here.
If I step in the closet, Kevin thought, if I just cross over, I can bring him back. Bertram stretched his hand out as far as he could, and Kevin took one step toward the closet, reaching for Bertram's grimy, wriggling fingers. Then Bertram turned into an old winter coat, and the rattling chains became nothing more than the wire hangers clattering in the breeze of an open window. Kevin found himself in his pajamas, standing at the closet door. The dream and the memory of Bertram's face were already fading. But still, Kevin knew this was no ordinary dream. Not just because of how real it felt, but because of the smell that still filled the house, the awful bubblegum stench of a million rotten strawberries.
Gross.
Later. Kevin stood for the longest time in front of Terry's bed, not having the nerve to wake her up. She was a nightmare when she woke up.
I was just gonna say, she's terrifying.
Eventually, she awoke by herself to see Kevin standing there, the way an axe murderer might. She gasped, then angrily threw a pillow at him. You don't scare me, she declared, so get out of here. Kevin didn't move. Terry sniffed the air. Ugh, what is that stink? Did you fart, Kevin? No, he answered. Terry, he said, his voice quavering. I gotta talk to you. Oh, for God's sake, it's 3 a.m. She peered at him in the darkness. Maybe there was enough light for her to see the trouble painted on his face. He had taken the glasses off, leaving them on his desk again, away from the outlet. He wondered if he looked as weak as he felt. It's all wrong, he thought. I shouldn't have to wear those stupid glasses just to feel good.
I used to be able to feel good without them, by touching myself.
He doesn't do that. He won't even look at
That's true.
Playboy.
Won't even look at the Playboy. But he couldn't even remember what that had been like. Is this about Nicole? Asked Terry. You know she likes you. Kevin nodded. He knew that now. He had figured out that the glasses didn't control Nicole's mind because they didn't have to. She had already liked him. Of course, that didn't mean she had to admit it, not even to herself. But that was screwed up now,
That's
too.
That's a fucking stretch.
I know. It's about a whole lot of things, said Kevin. I'm in trouble, Terry. Terry stared at him, studying him for the longest time. Something's really wrong, isn't it? She whispered. Kevin nodded. Climb aboard! Terry tossed him her favorite pillow, and Kevin hopped onto the end of her bed, sitting with his knees tucked into his chest.
That's cute.
Aww. True, much of the time, Terry was a general nuisance to Kevin, but that was only part of her job as his big sister. Oh, I thought she was his little sister.
I thought so, too.
Weird. Could have sworn she was his little sister. This was the other part. Tell me, said Terry. Tell me everything. You won't believe me. But the look on her face said that she would, no matter how crazy or awful his secret was. If it's the truth, then I'll know, she said. Then she added, but if you woke me up in the middle of the night and tell me a lie, I'll beat the fucking shit out of you. She took his foot in her hands and began rubbing it to get it warm. Gross. Kevin told her everything, from the beginning and even through what... From the beginning, and even though it was...
Are you okay?
No. No, I'm not. I need my glasses. I need to wear the glasses. Kevin told her everything, from the beginning, and even though it was the word of her crazy brother against the rest of the sane, rational world, Terry did the most wonderful thing a sister could ever do. She chose to believe her brother. It was nearly dawn when Kevin was done. Terry didn't say anything. She just sat there, staring at him.
Then she finally said, "We have to do some serious thinking. Can I stay with you tonight?" Kevin hadn't asked that since he was 6, yet somehow he didn't feel ashamed to ask her now. He didn't think Terry would let him leave anyway. He doubted she wanted to be alone either. As long as you don't snore, she said, then changed her mind. Nah, you can snore as much as you want. They lay on the bed, stretched out in opposite directions, but neither one of them slept. Soon early dawn washed the room gray, and Kevin could hear his father getting ready for his morning run. On his way downstairs, Patrick Midas... Stop calling people by their full name. Fucking name.
We have to remember that their last name is Midas.
Passed by Terry's open door and stopped when he caught sight of Kevin there. Terry pretended to be asleep, but Kevin didn't. He stared right at his father. That's a really creepy
That's
move.
Super creepy. I hate that.
Ooh, Mr.
Is this a thing that needs my attention, or can I just fuck off?
Good morning, father.
Mr. Midas stood on the threshold for a moment, as if he were about to speak. Kevin wanted him to speak, to say anything. If I told Terry, thought Kevin, I could tell him too. Whether he believed me or not, at least he'd have to do something. Anything. Mr. Midas lingered by the door for a moment, then turned away. Whatever creepy shit's going on in here, I don't want to know about.
He was like, I'm going to choose to ignore this.
Yeah. Kevin could hear him bounding down the stairs and out the door. He didn't even ask what I'm doing in here, whispered Kevin. He knows something's wrong, but he didn't even ask. Kevin couldn't remember the last time either of his parents wanted to know anything. They didn't ask about his recent mood swings or what he spent his time thinking about. They didn't ask about the bursts of energy and hours of weariness that had filled his life since he found the glasses. They rarely seemed to notice when Kevin was out of whack, and when they did notice, they would write it off as if it were nothing.
Jesus Christ.
Because teenagers are weird.
Are we finishing here?
Yeah, I think so.
Take us home, Becca.
Yeah, take us home, Becca.
If I were strangling to death, Mom would shove spoons of Robitussin down my throat to make it all better, Kevin told Terry. If I were drowning, Dad would say, no pain, no gain. They never ask what's really going on. Don't they even care? They care, whispered Terry. But they won't ask because they're afraid of the answer.
Eek.
Oh, man.
Damn. I remember Huey saying that this gets very existential, and he wasn't lying.
Yeah.
This book's insane.
This book is absolutely insane.
There's a tiny child now. A tiny 6-inch tall child.
There's a tiny child, and a different child is in hell. That's the thing. The tiny child is absolutely crazy. But to me, what's crazier is that hell literally opened blocks.
I already was assuming people would die. I'm shocked no one has straight up died. I really thought Bertram was going to be dead and in hell.
This seems
but
worse.
He just seems like his soul is trapped there.
I'd rather be dead. Free. I'd rather die.
Well, than go you to might hell. Go to hell when you die. Look at you.
But what?
I don't
what?
Know.
Cause
you're a heathen.
Because I'm wearing a Dracula shirt and I got a bunch of tattoos.
Yeah, exactly. You belong in hell. Look at that mustache. All twirly on the ends.
That's true.
You fit right in.
It's very devilish. Lee Handsome. Wow. Just when I thought it couldn't get crazier.
Mm-hmm.
What a book.
What a book.
What a book.
What do you think, Jill Valentine?
I love it. tiny children.
It speaks to me as a 6-inch person.
As a tiny child.
As a tiny child.
Well, I can't even fucking imagine where we're going to go from here.
I don't know. I can't either.
I can't wait until the next time when you read the notes from this episode.
Oh my God.
I can't wait until the next time and we have a guest and we catch them up on what happened last time, which was a child went to hell.
A child was sent to hell.
A child was sentenced to hell.
And then everyone forgot he existed.
Damn. Harsh. That is harsh.
Serves him right. He was a little dickhead.
Oh, no, he deserves to go to hell. I'm just saying that's crazy that it happened. Fucking... Oh my God, I love this book. This book is incredible.
It's a good book.
Well, thank you for listening. Join us next time as we continue reading. I think we probably got 2 more episodes in us for The Eyes of Kid Midas. Join us next time to find out what other shenanigans, who else Kevin sends to hell, maybe, or what other horrific body horror might befall somebody. You can follow us on Facebook, follow Cactus Rodeo on Facebook, follow Below Grade Level on Instagram, and now TikTok. We're on TikTok now. So look up Below Grade Level and interact with us. And
don't.
No. Interact with us.
Interact with us.
Don't listen to Chris.
I'm running our TikTok.
Becca's running the TikTok.
We don't want to tell them what to do. It's just if you choose to interact with us, cool.
No, I want to tell them what to do. No, interact with us.
Like we're Kid Midas.
Yeah.
Do it.
If I was Kid Midas, I'd put the sunglasses on. I would be like, we have 1 million followers. No, that seemed bad, actually. Oh, no. I fucked it up already.
I'm ready for that.
I fucked it up immediately. Ah, no. Yeah, check out Below Grade Level on Instagram and TikTok. And we're also on YouTube now.
And Threads.
And
you
Threads.
Just put us on Threads.
We're on Threads, whatever the fuck that is. Because I fucking hate Twitter, and I'm never going, fuck X.
Social media is now just such a fucking morass that it's just...
The only reason any of this is happening is because I'm waiting to, start a job. And I don't have a job currently, so I have time.
That's what it takes for Jonathan to properly market stuff.
Oh, it's not properly marketed. I'm still a I'm a very bad marketer. But at least I am making clips and putting them on a million different fucking websites. It's a nightmare. But anyway, yeah, go check out our stuff.
Yeah, go enjoy it.
Yeah, go enjoy it. Tell us what you think. Like it and stuff.
Also, check out The Sketchy Show.
Yeah, check out The Sketchy
wherever
Show.
Wherever you get your podcast.
That's next on my list to market, to try and market, make a fucking account everywhere for. Sketchy Show, Below Grade Level, coming very soon, Casting Dreams, Dreamcast podcast that I'm hosting with my friend Patrick, and we're gonna record actually this Sunday and talk about, I believe, Resident Evil Code Veronica. So there's a bunch of good Dreamcast games to look forward to us talking about, if that's your thing. And that's it. Join us next time as we continue reading Neil Schusterman's The Eyes of Kid Midas. Thanks for listening. We love you. Bye.
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 Below Grade Level is a Cactus Radio production. You can contact us at podcast@cactusrodeo.com. Subscribe and follow on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. And follow Cactus Rodeo on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for more entertainment and updates.